Good evening and welcome to Bethel Church. Good to see you all in the house of God on this Sunday evening. Please don't rush off after service. Please come downstairs for more fellowship and light refreshments. Tuesday night at 7:30, God willing, will be our church prayer meeting, and that will be led by our pastor. All the other meetings this week are as per the Bethel newsletter for January and February. The next Saturday, the 26th of January, is the Leaders' Conference at Bridgend. As I mentioned last week, it's not only for leaders, it's for those who are working in various items in the church, children's work, youth work, etc. If you'd like to come along, please could you see Martin before the end of this evening so he can confirm the numbers. Next Sunday services will be at the usual times at 10:30 and 6, and God willing, will be led by our pastor, John Williams. And then if you can remember, Colin Griffiths, who God willing, will be preaching at the Presbyterian Church in Ponte Dulles next Sunday morning. Then Monday, the 28th of January at 7:30, the Daylight Prison Ministries prayer meeting, and God will not be led by David Lewis. And just to remind you, a date for your diaries, this February we celebrate our 125th anniversary services here at Bethel, and they will be held on Sunday the 24th of February, and the guest speaker is the Reverend Steve Foley of Tregeagha. But on the Friday night before, which is the 22nd of February, we'll be holding a celebration supper. And the food choice is fish and chips, £6 per head, and jumbo sausage chips are £4 a head. So there's a list on the table, on the vestibule notice board to my right. And if you'd like to come along, please add your names and tick your choice of food. Also, there will be a quiz organised by Sam, I believe, and there'll be a short address by David Williams, and all are welcome to come along to that. Notice for church members, Wednesday, February the 13th, will be a church AGM at 7:30. That's all the notices. I'll hand the service over to John. Thank you.
Now for our reading from God's Word this evening, we're turning to the first book of Samuel, to chapter 25, and we're reading the whole of that chapter, 44 verses. It deals with David, Nabal and Abigail. And we're looking at, again, the way in which the providence of God is clearly evident in the life of David. Sometimes there are enemies outside. There are enemies, there are Philistines who would attack him. There's Saul who is chasing him. The problems and the circumstances are outside. But sometimes, as a result of outward pressures, there are also enemies within. And this chapter deals with this subject and helps us to know how God provided a solution. 1 Samuel chapter 25. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah. Then David moved down into the desert of Maon. A certain man in Maon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband, a Calebite, was surly and mean in his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favourable towards my young men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them." When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name, and then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men from whom I know not where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. One of the servants told Nabal's wife Abigail, "David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields and near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us, all the time that we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seers of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I'll follow you." But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into the mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending towards her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He's paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey, bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My lord, let the blame be on me. Let the blame fall on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift, which your servant has brought to my master, be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master, because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you, that Saul is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. When the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant." David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she'd brought him and said, "Go back in peace, go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your requests." When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk, so she told him nothing until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord, who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head." And then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, David has sent us to you to take you to become his wife. She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, here is your maidservant, ready to serve you and to wash the feet of my master's servants. Abigail quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her five maids, went with David's messengers and became his wife. David had also married Ahinoam from Jezreel, and they both were his wives. But Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Paltiel, son of Laish, who was from Galim. And may the Lord then be pleased to bless this portion of his word to our hearts. Difficult times for David. As we open our studies of this 25th chapter, we begin by realizing that David has lost his mentor. We read simply, now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. It's just a short verse, but it's so full of meaning. Here's the changing of circumstances in the land of Israel. Remember, Samuel is an old man when he dies. We go back to when he was born. We remember Hannah, his mother's prayer, at the beginning of this book. Things were different in those days in Israel. And Samuel has been through all of those changes, political changes, social changes, the religious changes as well. And he's led and guided the people. He's appointed Saul as first king of Israel and known the heartbreak and the disappointment of that. And then led by the Lord in chapter 16 of this book to go to the house of Jesse and to anoint the youngest of the eight sons, David, in anticipation of being the next king of Israel. And we know that David benefited then from conversation with him. We know that when David was fleeing from Saul, after Saul had thrown a spear at him a couple of times and initially sought to have him kidnapped and killed, when David fled in 1 Samuel chapter 19, where did he go? He went to Samuel at Ramah. Spent some time there, but then Saul heard about that meeting, and so it became very difficult for David to remain there with Samuel. And so Samuel remains, David moves on and begins this life of being a fugitive. Now, we appreciate there's no mobile phones, there's no first-class post, but perhaps there would have been occasions through various intermediaries and messengers that Samuel could pass a message to David and David could pass a message to Samuel. And so perhaps there was this sense of connection. But his mentor, the one that he looked to, has now died. And he has died not seeing David become the king of Israel. And David must have felt this very keenly. How does the process of grieving affect us? And probably as well, we must realize David didn't attend the funeral here, although it said all Israel assembled. Perhaps David was unable to attend that funeral because of the obvious thought that Saul would have thought here's an opportunity to capture him if he comes to pay respect. So again, there's something of that when, there are so many obituaries that we read of and life is so busy, but there are those one or two occasions when you really feel you want to be there. There's a sense of a connection and you feel the connection is now being broken and it's part of your life. It's an important part and significant part and then because of circumstances you're unable to be there. So we must appreciate now then as we're coming into this chapter where David is. He's in a sense of grief and bereavement. Perhaps he's not been able to express his grief as he could have wished there publicly along with others. And so there's a lot that's going on inside him. Now, there's a lot going on outside. And we mentioned this as we introduced the reading. The struggles that we have. Fightings without, fears within, says the old hymnist. Well, here we have it. Now, so Samuel dies. That's the first point. Now, the second thing we notice, there's mention of this man, Nabal. And what we notice about Nabal is that he disparages David. What's the background to this man? Well, he's a very wealthy man, we read. And you know, sometimes when people are wealthy, they don't owe anybody anything. You know, they can pass you by. You don't have to be a human being even. They have to consider you. They're well above you. And you get the picture of this man. He's achieved. Now, whether it was wealth that was passed on to him by his father, because he came from the line of Judah. He was an ancestor of Caleb. Now, Caleb is a very godly man. Caleb was the friend of Joshua. Caleb and Joshua are the two of the 12 spies, two of them, came back, having visited the land of Israel, gave a good report and said, with God's help and strength, we can conquer this land. The majority report said, they're such big people, so tall people, so many in number, we will never overcome them. And so that's the sort of background, a good ancestry from the stock of Judah. David as well, we know, is from the tribe of Judah as well. And Caleb then a good ancestor. But he's nothing like a chip off the old block at all. He's Nabal. We hear of Nabal. He's not a man of faith like Caleb. He's not a man of perseverance. He's surly and mean, we read. Surly and mean. And David's men, we read, now have acted like unpaid voluntary bodyguards. Nabal's men have been out with these massive sheep, a crowd, a flock, we could say, of sheep and goats. And they've been in the fields, they've been shearing them, perhaps, around this area of Carmel. And David, in one sense, because he's there, he's just keeping an eye on them. Just keeping an eye on them. Remember the story in the town here? There were some who were very, very concerned about three men who were always sitting in the park, always with a couple of jars and jugs, and they felt it was a sadness to the town. Little did they realise, if they'd spoken to them, they kept an eye on the park. No youngsters could go in there and pull up bulbs without them making a point about it. Nothing could go on there in terms of anybody having a fight with one another without these three gentlemen who, in one sense, were lords of the manor as far as the park was concerned. You didn't argue and discuss with them. Little realizing, and in one sense, it was all voluntary work. Well, in similar manner, David and his men have acted as security men, unpaid for. And obviously, they prevented raids from those outside. And they've also been above board in their dealings. They've not stolen any of the sheep or goats for themselves. But you can imagine with 600 men, it's going to be difficult for David on a regular basis to be able to feed such a quantity of men, such an army then. Now, shearing time is an occasion for thanksgiving. It's a bit like a harvest of the crop, of the fruit. It's a sense of provision. And there would be a festivity, a sense of celebration. There would be a great coming together of all those involved in it. And there would be a sharing of a great meal. And so at shearing time, David thinks it's an appropriate time just to send. He doesn't send all of them. They don't all go up there as if they're invading. He just sends 10, and they seem to be young men as well. So they're not hardened battle soldiers that you would think, who are these coming? No, they're young men. And so they're sent up with a message on behalf of David to explain that this is how they've cared and provided for them. And they're just wondering now, in the light of the celebration, and everybody's happy because everything has gone well, would there be opportunity for them to have something to eat? Could some provision be given to them as well? As Nabal then reflects back upon a year of God's provision and God's providence. And so this is what's looked for, and confirmation could be given, these young men say in verse 8, could be given and sought from Nabal's old men. If Nabal thought, well, I don't know if this is the case, this could be a made-up story, you know, you have someone coming along and explaining that they've been such a help to you, but you've never heard of them. Well, Nabal is told, well, your young men, your own servants can confirm this if you ask them. We've been around them and we've been acting as a wall to protect them over many days, perhaps many weeks, even further than that. And yet then, when we have this message passed on, whether Nabal was Saul's supporter, he could well have been leaned a true royalist, then we could say he was supporting the Saul and the history and the first king. And although a man of Judah, and David was certainly from the tribe of Judah, or perhaps whether Nabal, you see, was a man who perhaps read the newspapers as far as knowing what was happening politically, like the Ziphites, who in the previous chapter had seen that perhaps you've got to be careful, you don't want to upset Saul. So when the Ziphites heard that that David was living near them, they passed the information on to Saul to try and help him. Because they thought, well, you've got to keep on the right side of Saul. So it could simply have been that with this man Nabal. He was a supporter of Saul, or perhaps he wanted to be seen as a supporter. Also, perhaps as well, he was mindful that people in the past who had helped David, he thinks back perhaps to chapter 20 here, to a priest called Ahimelech. David arrives there after he's run away from the court, and he simply asked Ahimelech for some bread off the bread of the presence in the tabernacle, and also as well for a sword, Goliath's sword. Well, perhaps Nabal has realized, well, the man who did help him, I know what happened. He did that some time back in 1 Samuel chapter 20, but then by 1 Samuel 22, Ahimelech and his whole family have been murdered by Doeg at Saul's command. And so you think to himself, well, yes, he might have thought, well, I'd better not side with David, because although it might be a man on the up, until he's up, I can't support him. And Nabal speaks, there's no question about it. He disparages David. Now, let's remember that David was the leading army. He was the leader of the army before he had to flee for his own life. He'd fought so many battles. He'd killed Goliath. And yet there's this disparaging, this belittling, this denigrating, this minimizing, this undervaluing of who David is and what David has done. Who is this son of Jesse? Who is this David? Many servants are breaking away from their masters in these sorts of days. You know, everybody's doing what they like. Well, I'm not going to support that sort of unsocial sort of attitude. So there's Nabal disparaging David. Now, we need to consider now the battles that's not only raging outside, but imagine the battle now that is going to rage with inside David's heart. We sometimes think it's only the external battle with circumstances, but it's so much more than that, isn't it? Now, the third thing we notice then, Samuel has died, Nabal is disparaging him. David detonates. That's the best word. He erupts. He blows his top. He explodes. His intention is clear. You see it in verse 13, when the news comes back and these men have reported the words that were said, put on your swords. Now, that's not for a group photograph. That's not that we'll all dress up in our finery and have a nice photograph with all our... No, that's intention. That's murder. That's revenge. That's, I'm not putting up with this. He was livid. He leaves 200 men with what possessions they have, and he storms out to Nabal's property with 400 hungry men. And at the head is an angry man. Now let's go back to the previous chapter, to chapter 24. How David had been able to hold it together with Saul. Saul in the cave, do you remember? And David's men saying, David, this is your chance. Stab him, kill him. And David has to say, no, I can't do this. And he even has to restrain his men. There's men that say, well, if you can't do it, David, if you've got a problem with it, let one of us go and do it. We'll end him now. And how David, by as a result of the word of God coming to him, he knew, you shall not kill. It's one of the Ten Commandments. He knew also that Saul, although he was doing so much evil and so much wicked things against David, although he was innocent of so much of these things that he'd been charged with, yet there was a sense in which he was still the Lord's anointed, and he shouldn't kill him. He shouldn't harm him in any way. And David knew success at that point. And yet here, look how quickly we're in how much time is between it. But Samuel has died. So there's grief and there's sorrow, and he's perhaps been unable to express his grief there. And then this has happened, and this isn't now a man threatening to murder David. This is just a man saying, no, I'm not giving you any of my food. Who do you think you are? And what we would think on a normal level, what David has faced, what he's put up with, what he's gone through already. I mean, you say, well, David, that's You've been facing things 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. That's less than 5 out of 10 what you had there. So you'll find food from somewhere. The Lord will help you. But there's something exploding within this man, David, at this point. Now, he'd been able to hold it all together. He'd shown restraint. And he'd desisted from regicide. That's the killing of the king. But here, these things have been building up. They're about to burst out. Now, what can we read into it? Could it have been that all that restraint that he'd shown with regards to dealing with Saul was flowing over into this situation now that he had to face? Tell the story, I don't think it's true, it just illustrates a point. But you might have heard of the man who was at work, and he was called into the office before the boss, and he was given quite a stern talking to. Really talking, he nearly lost his job. And so he came out with his head bowed down. And of course, the end of the day came, so he went home. As soon as he got home, he had a terrible row with his wife. He told her what he thought of her. He told her what he thought of the home she was running and everything. And then the wife turned round to the oldest child and gave them a row for not doing the homework and not helping out as they could. And then the oldest child had a tack on the middle child and began to tell them that she didn't like them and the way they were borrowing clothes without asking. And then the little child then, she was attacked for playing with toys that she should have asked for. And the story goes, and in the end, the little toddler kicked the cat. And can you see what's happened? It sort of all tripled. It all sort of tripled down. It started somewhere. And it wasn't perhaps dealt with. And so it moved on, and what was really should have been addressed to a situation and say, well, you know, I appreciate, I might be a very poor man at work here, but that's no way to speak to an employee. I think you could address your issues in a different way rather than to call me names like that. You know, rather than to tackle it there, you know, we take it on and then we let it boil up, don't we? And then we're hitting out to people and they've done nothing. And we're hitting out to them. And we're angry, really, with the world, but we're addressing, we've got to get it out somewhere. Go ten-pin bowling, that's the answer. Bowl them down, hard as you can. But there we are, this is what's happening here. So we can sometimes act so well in a situation, and David had done that in the previous chapter. But we find we do not do so well in another challenging situation, yet the principles are the same. It's an affront to David. It's an unkindness, but it's not a threat to murder him. But David, at this point, he cannot handle it. The word of God, it seems, is not a means of guidance and of help to him at this point as it has been in the past. David seemed to come to an understanding of what he needed to do as a result of his knowledge of the word of God. But in this instance, he will need other help. And this is where then Abigail comes into the picture, verses 14 through to verse 31. Whereas David detonates in terms of exploding and blowing up and erupting, Abigail diffuses. She almost sort of takes the fuse out of it all and takes the pressure. She disarms him in a very wonderful way. Sometimes you see God will send a person into your life, into your situation at the exact moment to providentially prevent an action that you could, which could have serious long-term consequences if you carry them out. But when they come, it's sometimes a word of warning. They're noticing a trend in you. They're noticing an attitude that's developing in you. And you see, most of us, we don't like that. We think we understand ourselves. We look at ourselves in the mirror every morning and we think we know ourselves. We don't. And sometimes there are those who are around us, they are our true friends, they are those who truly take an interest in us, and they point things out to us. And it is a challenge, it is a warning, sometimes it's a rebuke, and we find it difficult to cope with. Now we know David has a man after God's own heart. And this is again one of the strengths of this man. You see, he could say, I'm sorry, he's lost his chance. I don't care who you are, I'm on my way down here, I'm going to do it. No, he pauses. And he realizes to a measure that he can see God working in this situation. In contrast to a foolish husband, Abigail's already been described in verse 3 as an intelligent and a beautiful woman. And in considering this divine intervention, for that is what it is, let us not pass by without commenting on the sensitive servant who tipped off Abigail. He is unnamed. Verse 14, we don't know his name, but he was sensitive enough to realize that something was brewing here. He knew what Nabal had said. And he knew you couldn't go talking to Nabal. He said, he talks about him then. He says, he is a wicked man and no one could talk to him. So it was no good the servant going to talk to Nabal. So what did he do? He went to talk to Abigail. He said, you better be appraised of this situation. This is what's blowing up. This is what's just happened. Why, you weren't there. So we must give thought to that young man, whoever he was. And then the whole scenario is painted in vivid words in verses 15 to 17. And then there's quick thinking on behalf of Abigail and it's required to avert what's going to be a disaster, as this young man says in verse 17. So she acts immediately. Great provision is made. You've got the list there. And the journey then is taken to meet David, almost to come and prevent him before he gets there. And the anger and the resentment and the violence that was the motivation for the action is commented on in verses 21 to 22. Now, it's probably the case that David had said all these things to himself and to his fellow soldiers even before he set out on the journey. This fellow's property, I've protected it all. It's been a waste of time. It's been useless. Nothing is left missing to him. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belongs to him. I'll put him right. He'll be finished. And you notice how Abigail begins. She begins as David began with Saul in the previous chapter. Remember when Saul had come out of the cave? And David allows him to go a certain distance. Then he comes out. And what do you read about David in chapter 24, verse 8? He shouted to Saul, and Saul turned round, and David bowed down, prostrated himself on the floor as a mark of respect to Saul. And that's exactly what Abigail does here. Look, in verse 23, bowing down before him, face on the ground. She begins with that sense of humility. And then she willingly blames herself for the ill treatment, although she was absolutely innocent, and she has to say, well, I wasn't there when the young men came. But she takes it upon herself. And there's a picture there, isn't there not, of a, we can see something of an innocent taking the responsibility for the actions of the ungodly. A little bit of a picture, perhaps, in one sense, of what happened at Calvary. Innocent, and yet takes upon themselves the blame that wasn't theirs on behalf of others. And she asks him then to pay no attention to the words of her husband. Well, only a wife can openly describe her husband's character. And she says, pay no attention to him. Nabal's his name, fool is his name, foolish he is by nature. Now comes the first reference here in verse 26 to this lovely word in this chapter, kept. It takes us back again to the providence of God. Notice what Abigail says in verse 26. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands. There's Abigail, by her very appearance there, her turning up, the bringing of this food. She sees that sense of being an instrument in keeping David from doing that which was wrong and evil. And so there's that first thought there of a timely intervention, God's providence. It's not only guidance in the right way, it's preventing us when we're going the wrong way. And as that's true for David, it's true of his people also. But it's not only a word of warning that she gives, but it's also a word of encouragement. Look at this in verse 28. She says, you see, the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master. Now, however much perhaps Nabal was trying to read the political situation and what was going on at court, Abigail senses, as a former Prime Minister of Britain once did, he said that there's a wind of change. Well, Abigail recognises this. It's blowing over Israel. There's to be a new king, and she's astute and reads the national scene quite well, and she says, yes, your dynasty will remain. Now imagine David in all the turmoil and strife that he's going through. And don't forget, Samuel is dead. And Samuel hasn't lived to see it. And yet this woman comes to the situation here. And she says, yes, your dynasty, your family, it will remain, it will continue. And also the encouragement is found with regards to Saul's pursuit of him. She says, yes, there is one who is pursuing you. She mentions him in verse 29, not by name, but your life is safe in the hands of God, in the bundle of life. This picture that there's a protection, and we think of those words of the Lord Jesus in John chapter 10. If you're a believer, you're in his hand, and you're also in God's hand. There's a double protection upon you. You're safe in his hand, safe in his keeping, safe in his care. And she just encourages him. Oh, she's had to warn him. Don't do what you're planning to do, but your dynasty will remain, and God will protect you, although there is someone who is chasing you. When he becomes king, she asks him to remember her, but also that in verse 31, when she becomes king, he won't have a blood-stained conscience. You see, there are many things that we do in life, and we have to live with the consequences of them. And perhaps you're passing a place, or you're seeing a face, or you hear a name, and it floods back into your mind, and you think, it's nothing I can do. It's nothing I can do. I wish I could run the tape back and relive it. And it's no good. You can't do anything. You have to live with that state in your conscience. But here's David. He's been assured now that this wouldn't be the case. He'd be able to carry on as when he became king. And he'd be able to rule without sense of not looking back upon the events that took place up to coming to becoming king. And he did something so terrible. So she defuses the situation. And then, fifthly, David desists. You see it in verse 32. David recognizes God's hand in all of this. He praises God for the meeting. He praises God for the words that she's spoken to him. He praises God for this gift of food that acts as a peace offering, really. And we know two further references again to the word kept. Verse 33, David acknowledges that God sent Abigail. He thanks her for keeping me from bloodshed. So now he's thanking Abigail. He sees Abigail as the instrument. And he's listened to what she's had to say. And he so gratefully says, thank you, he said. Because if I hadn't met you, if I hadn't heard what you had to say, I'd have slayed them all. And then not only that, but he also acknowledges that this is an act of divine mercy. He speaks then of God in the following verse, God who has kept me from harming you. That's Abigail and the family there, and those who worked on the farm there with neighbour. And so he accepts the food and sends her home in peace, and he does not carry out what he had initially intended. And then the last point this evening is this, Nabal's demise. See it in verse 36 to 39. Nabal was oblivious to the danger he was in. Here's a gospel principle here. Like so many, they're living their life. They speak to this one, speak to that one. They're wealthy. They've got everything they want. They treat others with disrespect. They disparage the gospel. They disparage the anointed king. They speak irreverently of him. Who is he? I don't care about him. I've got words to speak to him. I'll tell you this, it'll come to this point where they don't realize the danger that they're in. Like most who don't realize how their lives have been an affront to God and how they will answer to him. Happily drinking and feasting, it's a picture really of life, isn't it? Eat, drink and be merry. And then Abigail leaves it till the morning, sobers up, and the reality hits him. He has a form of stroke, and within 10 days he's dead. David, on hearing then, thanks the Lord again for, verse 39, the fourth time, for keeping his servant from doing wrong. Providence of God, keeping him from doing wrong. Now, let's look at some quick lessons as we close. Firstly, the importance of significant mentors and individuals in our lives. Give thanks to God for them. But we must continue in the ways that they taught us after they are no longer with us. One example of a young king, Joash, we spoke about him at Christmas time, protected by his aunt and uncle. He became king at 7 years of age. Athaliah, his grandmother, was a wicked king. He became king. And sadly, do you know what the scripture says of Joash? He did that which was right all the days of Jehoiada the priest. As long as his godly uncle was with him to guide him and to lead him, he did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. But after Jehoiada, his elderly uncle, died, Joash listened to other things, listened to other people, took on other advice, and it ended in tragedy. Secondly, we must struggle with those who are unkind to us. and not take matters into our own hands. Now, David could do this with regards to Saul, and maybe there are those, perhaps significant others, members of our families, perhaps we've struggled with the issue and we've committed it to the Lord and we're managing. We're able to do that. We're able to struggle with it, to those who are unkind, don't consider us, disparage us, and we don't take things into our own hands. But then thirdly, we must identify those feelings of hurt and resentment and deal with them before they develop into words and actions. You see, you can be so good in some areas and then so quick to flip in other things. And we must thank God as well for those whom he sends into our path to speak to us, to challenge us, to warn us, to rebuke us perhaps. So we need to accept the rebuke, to accept the warning and the challenge, but also to thank God that also there are words of encouragement in what is brought to us as well. And then finally, we must see that God's providence is shown in the way he protects us often from ourselves. And that's certainly what happened here. You think, well, David needs to be protected from Saul. But this chapter is telling us, no, David needs to be protected from himself. And God did so. May God help us to understand these principles tonight for his name's sake.